John Carroll Lynch here. Hello! I'm here. American Horror Story has been a big part of my life and a big part of my work, and it's been a joy to be on that show for a lot of different reasons. I just have one little tiny piece of advice, which is don't go out there.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to DGOT, the series. I hope y'all have been enjoying these series reviews. I know I have. Been a nice little change up from doing just the movies each week. We just concluded True Detective Season 1. That was an incredible series. Great job, Brian. I really enjoyed it. I actually watched it again this past weekend. It was really good.
Oh, shit.
We're starting a new series this week. My choice, I was torn between two of them, Dahmer and American Horror Story 1984. But I went ahead and chose American Horror Story 1984. I know Brian's been jonesing to watch some American Horror Story, so I figured why not now? And it's summertime, so I feel like the mood, it fits perfect for right now. I've seen this series once recently. I enjoy it. I'll be honest with you. I think I mentioned it when we were doing Hill House. I struggle to remember horror series more than movies. Like, I struggle to remember what the hell goes on in these shows way harder than, like, movies. I can't really remember everything that goes on, but these first two episodes, I really enjoyed the first two episodes watching these again. I know we've gotten some comments on social media where too much starts to go on and, like, they start losing interest towards the end. And I remember feeling that way as well with this one. But these first few episodes, I think, are really good, and they capture that atmosphere. And it's got a fun cast. I love Emma Roberts. She's great. Brian, what do you think of the first two episodes, or just episode one, however you want to do it, of American Horror Story 84?
I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, if you haven't listened to the conclusion of True Detective, you know, it was mentioned that I was the lone wolf who had not seen the series at all, any season. So, you know, I still am looking forward to this season as a whole. You know, now I only took it these two episodes. I'm yet to pull a Walking Dead and jump ahead here. But I got to say, so far, I'm a little bit disappointed. Like, I think I was expecting more of a Fear Street 78 vibe where, you know, we're taking it seriously. But so far, it's almost like we ventured a little bit too far into parody territory of a, you know, love letter, like they say that this is a love letter to 80s slashers almost. I almost think it's gone a little bit into the parody territory. And, I mean, I think I liked episode two a little better, but I'm still not sure because, like you mentioned, there is a lot packed into just two episodes here. So, again, I am reserving judgment as a whole. But so far, I'd be lying if I didn't say I was a little disappointed at least. So I am eager to see how it continues on.
So I've seen a lot of episodes, or, you know, a lot of seasons of American Horror Story. I'd actually never seen this one. I thought I had.
Jesus.
But I hadn't. I've seen a few episodes of this season, but not these first two. So this was my first time watching them. I'm a big fan of the show in general, the seasons that I have seen. So I am excited to review this season, and I'll never be upset about, you know, having a look at Emma Roberts. But just going off the first two.
Did you go ahead and watch this whole season as a whole first, or are you just two episodes in?
I'm just two episodes in. Having said that, you know, the rest of the show, the seasons that I've seen, they're a lot darker, I feel like, than these two episodes are. And so maybe that's why I didn't like them as much as I had hoped. And I remembered that, you know, when I started it, because the couple episodes that I have seen from the season, I remembered that it wasn't as dark. And one of my friends, Clint, I posted the graphic on our on my Instagram, you know, we're reviewing this show, send questions, and he sent me a message, said that this is the GOAT season. This is his favorite season. He said he likes that this one's more lighthearted. It reminds him of the terrible slasher movies from the 80s. And yeah, I agree with that. I agree with what you said, Brian. It does. It feels like kind of a parody of those, a lot of tributes paid. And that's fine. I'm not saying that they're bad. It's just, you know, I think that Murder House is my favorite season of this show. And every season that I've seen in completion or bits and pieces of after, I hold to that standard. And this one falls a little short. But that's not to say it's bad at all. I did enjoy these first two episodes.
And that's what I expected. Like, I expected this to be darker. Now, I haven't seen any of the other seasons either that you're talking about, but I expected this to be like that Fear Street 78, which was even, it was even darker. I mean, but, you know, all the movies that they play tribute to, Halloween, Friday the 13th, obviously, they all do take themselves seriously, and they are all dark. And so I think the comedy threw me off a little bit. I'm not real sure. I think we'll get into it, but it was just not, I guess, what I expected.
So the seasons that I've seen in full are Murder House, Asylum, Coven, Freak Show, Hotel. So I watched all those. Cult, Apocalypse. So Apocalypse is, for some reason, I thought that 84 was Apocalypse. And in hindsight, that's ridiculous for me to say that. But I definitely plan on picking Murder House and Asylum down the road, if not some of the others. But those, Brian, I think those are going to give you the vibes that you're looking for as far as being much darker and sinister.
Fair enough. I've only seen this season, Coven and Hotel. I liked all three of them personally for different reasons, but yeah. I didn't feel like any of these three seasons were super dark. They just had good characters, good kills, good stories, but I felt like all of them had too much going on too as well. Like there may be like too many stories are drawn out. But that's just me.
That's fair. That's how I felt about The Haunting of Hill House. You know, I was like, man, there's too much going on here. But you got six kids, put a condom on and focus on one story.
Fair enough. Dustin, never you're doing checked. The scene by scene. Whenever you want to get started, go ahead, brother.
All right. And like always, Lord, bear me strength with this reading. Episode 1, Redwood, Camp Redwood. We open with a title card that says 1970, and then we see two girls lezzing it up at a cabin on the lake, but one of them is nervous and hesitant. A guy pokes his head from under the covers and offers up a jimmy and starts smooching on the girls. We switch to a first-person POV of someone entering the room. One of the girls hears something, but the other two are more concerned with the trip to Poundtown. She finally decides to join in, and while she's taking her shirt off, the guy was stabbed in the neck, and then Nervous McGee gets a blade through the eye. Her body is dragged off, and the killer takes her ear as a souvenir. We see that the whole camp has been slaughtered and laid out on the floor as our killer makes his exit. Our opening credits hit next, and they are fucking awesome. So 80s with the occasional blood drip down the screen. Just perfect. While I was doing this, the opening credits were followed by a Jack Daniels commercial on my Hulu, because I don't pay for ad-free. And the commercial had AC/DC playing, and I thought I was back in Maximum Overdrive for a second. Anyway. On the other side of the credits, we get a bitchin' aerobic scene and some text on screen introducing the characters. Afterwards, Brooke is taking a shower when Montana says, "Hi, I'm not a les, just friendly," and offers to introduce Brooke to Chet, but Brooke says no thanks. Montana shares her goals of being the top aerobics competitor ever, and a friendship was born. Next, we see a group of guys talking about some murders, and we hear that cops are calling the killer the Night Stalker. The group shares their origin story, and Xavier invites the group to come with him to be camp counselors. They're all in, except Brooke, who says she can't because she's taking classes to become a veterinarian assistant. Montana gives Brooke her number in case she changes her mind. That's the open. What'd you guys think?
Okay, so first off, I'm a graphics guy. So that's actually Thriller font that this show uses for all of its brandings, you know, this entire season. The same font we use on all of our episode graphics as well. So just a little fun fact right there for any of you nerds who cared like I did. I love the cold open. I did wonder, like, why there was no screaming by anyone. Like, either he killed everyone while they were sleeping before he got to this threesome, these threesome participants, which, given how this was presented to us, I didn't really understand how that could have happened. Or, more likely, he attacked these three first and would have woken everybody else up, right? So, right off the bat, I'm, like, asking if something supernatural is going on here a little bit, or did he, like, stab these people and she screamed and then he just went nuts on everyone, like, very quickly? And judging by how fucking slow he walks, I don't know. I don't know about that one. Nobody got away? I mean, I don't know. I do love these credits, though. Perfect, catchy, great job from Kyle Cooper and his company Prologue. They also did the opening credits for the movie Seven and The Walking Dead. Great job by these guys. Nico, two questions right off the rip. I promise I'm not making fun of you or anything. But number one, did you know that Billie Lourd is Carrie Fisher's daughter and Debbie Reynolds' granddaughter?
I knew the Carrie Fisher part, yes.
Okay. Number two, do you know who Carrie Fisher is? That was the follow-up there.
Yeah, she was that lady in Scream 3.
She was in Scream 3.
She was. She absolutely was. You're right.
And she was probably not Princess Leia. She was Princess Leia.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Dude, good. I was just asking.
That's so funny that you said that, Nico, because I was going to act like I didn't know Star Wars. I was gonna, oh, yeah. She was in Scream 3. That's where I know her from. That's funny.
Okay. Another fun fact here. The moves in the exercise routine in the opening scene following those taught by instructor Jesse played in 1985's Perfect by Jamie Lee Curtis. Just another tie-in there to the genre, one of many. Decent opening. Introduction to everybody.
All right, off rip, I thought the opening scene, it captured the summer camp feel, and it had a great sense of tension. I love the transition shot from the girl taking her shirt off to the knife being in the back of folks' neck. Whew! And damn, what a stab to the eye. I thought it was some great gore. Which kind of bothers me later on with that gut kill, because the gore looked great in this scene. This camera panning out of the cabin with all the dead bodies, that's how Jason Lives should have been if it wasn't for the MPAA neutering that movie. Like I said, for True Detective, I won't watch it every single episode, but like you guys mentioned, I love everything about the opening credits, the music, the look, the style, the fashion. It captures the 80s perfectly. And I didn't know what you mentioned, Brian, about the same people did Walking Dead and Seven. That's a pretty good company to be in. I got a chuckle out of Montana telling Brooke in the showers, I'm not a les, just friendly. Both these ladies are smoking hot and have a completely different look. Nothing to do with review talk, just an observation on my end. As a big true crime listener, I think it might be kind of weird to say, but I am excited after the Night Stalker mention. I think it's going to bring a nice factor to the episode. I'm actually excited about that with Maxine as well. Not actually, you know, I don't want to contradict myself and like in our, we said in our trailer reaction, but I'm excited with the Night Stalker mention. I love how awkward Brooke is amongst his new group of friends, just considering we know how, you know, how Emma Roberts is from previous roles. I thought it was a really fun set of opening scenes. I'm excited for where this is going.
And Nico, before I get going, this is the second time that the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, is featured in this show. He's also in season 5's Hotel, played by a different actor, but there's that.
Yeah, I saw Hotel. I liked Hotel. It had a lot of serial killers in it.
Yeah, it did. All right. Later that night, Brooke gets ready for bed at home. While she sleeps, a man breaks in and demands her jewelry. Emma Roberts would never have to be worried or scared with me around. I'm just saying. Anyway, the guy threatens her, and she fights him off with a cast iron skillet. The neighbor yells to check on her, and the man is scared away, but says he's the Night Stalker, and he vows to find her. The next day, a van is traveling along, and Ray offers Brooke a flask. Looks like classes weren't that important. Montana gasses her up and Ray hits some key bumps, and we hear that Chet was disqualified from the Olympics for a failed drug test. When they stop for gas, Xavier checks his answering machine at home, and we hear a man who's upset that Xavier took his dick away so that he knows where he's going. Then in a very Camp Crystal Lake moment, the gas station attendant warns the group to go back to the city and says they never should have opened the camp back up. They don't take his advice, though, and as they balance driving, hitting the bong, and looking at the map, Xavier plows into a man on the road. Xavier then channels their, the group then channels their inner, I know what you did last summer, and says they've got to get their story straight. They didn't hit him. but they'll take him to the camp. When they arrive at camp, we find out that they're the only counselors because the Olympics have dipped into the hiring pool. Brooke asks for a medic for their victim, and Xavier tells the nurse that he was by the road and not making much sense. Camp owner Margaret gives the gang a tour, and we meet Chef Birdie, who's hilarious. When Xavier says dibs on her, she quips back, "You wouldn't know what to do with it if you got it," while ripping a cig. Hell yeah. Continuing the tour, we hear that sex is off limits. Margaret knows that that's a huge trigger for Jason, apparently. That's the next set of scenes. What'd you guys think?
I think Bradley Bucher, the director for this episode, and he's done at least two for every season of American Horror Story up to this point. But I think his shots are very well done, especially during the Night Stalker scenes, which, again, I'm still feeling the series out, though, with the writing. This part with the Night Stalker almost felt like she was dreaming this, and then it turns out she wasn't. So another nice little nod, though, the 1978 Chevy van that they're driving here, very similar to the 81 van that they featured in Friday the 13th, Part 3. By the way, stay tuned in September for that one coming up over in the movie pod there. Obviously, we get the Friday the 13th nod again with the gas station attendant, Ed, spelling gloom and doom. But again, almost venturing into parody territory there. I mean, is that what they're going for? I'm not, you know, again, I'm not real sure. I haven't seen the rest of it. It is cool to see Don Swayze playing, I don't know. His jumpsuit says Ed, but it says Roy in the credits. So maybe that'll come back into play in the series later. I don't know. I haven't seen him. He's the brother, of course, to the late Patrick Swayze there. Looks just like him. Was Gus in True Blood as well, which we'll get to eventually for sure. But when they first hit the dude who ran out of the woods, I thought the same thing Dustin or wrote down. Okay, we have some I Know What You Did Last Summer vibes happening thrown in here. But it didn't really pan out that way. Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Shout out Rick James, because no way old dude missed that fucking guy in broad daytime. I was a little bit like, what the hell? Decent group of scenes again. I'm still trying to feel these characters out. Margaret, man, I didn't even recognize Leslie Grossman. Like I saw where she's a staple in American Horror Story and in the other seasons, but I remember her from Nip Tuck. And that wardrobe, man, did her no favors. Like when she first came on the screen, I was like, what the hell is going on here? Why does her chin look like Thanos? Like I don't know. Like I don't know. They definitely did a number on her makeup wise, because I mean she's almost 50 years old and definitely doesn't appear that way. So anyway, go ahead.
All right, like you mentioned, Brian, I thought it was elite camera work as Brooke gets home, parks the car, and walks inside her house. I think, you know, it's like small details like with shots that it's what makes shows and movies good. You know, this is a horrifying scenario for Brooke having the Night Stalker break into your home. However, huge nitpick here. Y'all ever use the cast iron skillet? That son of a gun is heavy as hell. Getting hit in the face with that would hurt like hell, and he'd likely have a concussion, if not worse. Easy. And no offense to Emma Roberts, swinging that thing like that, it's going to take a lot of strength, too. I mean, cast iron skillet's every bit of 10 pounds, if not heavier.
Yeah.
And my goodness, Emma, you are hurting for a squirting seeing Chet without his shirt on. Goodness gracious.
Jesus.
What? I've said that line on the show plenty of times.
And it makes me laugh every time.
They're going to kick me off of doing notes like this. Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell. Such a fire song, and it fits any 80s themed horror movie. I'm excited, you know, yet again to hear that one in Maxine. Xavier, like y'all mentioned, how the fuck you didn't see the guy in the middle of the road? And you can also tell he's a shitty person already, scheming up lies to get their storyline for how he got hurt. Fuck this guy. Leslie Grossman, I think she does a great job portraying the prude camp counselor. This is my last bit, but I thought it was another fun set of scenes.
All right. While Nurse Rita joins the group around a campfire, Brooke tells her she was attacked by the Night Stalker, and Rita tells him something happened at the camp before and that no one wants to be there. Camp Redwood was the site of the biggest summer camp massacre of all time at the hands of Mr. Jingles, who liked to make ear necklaces from his victims when he was in Nam. Storytime is interrupted by Margaret, who says she's wrong and reveals that she's missing an ear, courtesy of Mr. Jingles himself. An angel helped her survive, and that was her motivation to buy the camp. We cut to the infirmary, where our wounded hiker wakes up and looks in the mirror to see he's missing an ear. Brooke goes to check on the hiker, and the light bulb blows when she turns it on. As if that didn't scare her enough, the hiker is creeping in the shadows, and he tells her that she shouldn't be there. When she tells him they're at Camp Redwood, he freaks out and says she has to leave. When she's back with the group, a man named Trevor bursts in and brings them some much-needed comedic relief. He cracks open a PBR, hell yeah, and rips the bong and tells him he's the first thing she ever flicked the bean to. Okay. Later, Trevor and Montana go skinny dipping, and when he goes down underwater to taste the menu, Montana is freaked out by a vehicle starting and headlights shining in the water, and she tells him they should get out of the water. We cut to a car arriving at a loony bin where patients are scattered about in the rain outside. We hear that a patient has escaped and freed everyone. It was Jingles. 3 hours earlier, we see how it went down. He hung himself, but wasn't dead. He made a little trickery out of the sheet there. He choked out the orderly and stole his keys. In his cell later, Dr. Hopple finds a newspaper page showing that the camp is reopening. And the next set of scenes, the ending.
You know, and I know his last set of scenes, but I did want to say that I love Sheriff Birdie's line, like, you wouldn't know what to do with it if you got it, handsome. That cracked me up. It's also, sidebar a little bit, but it's also nice to kind of see it swapped from what we got in a lot of the 80s movies, which, you know, in the 80s movies, we got this nasty ass old fat man who was a chef who was eye fucking all the young counselors. And it was grand. This was way less creepy. And, you know, at least this made me laugh. Did you hear that, Mike? Every stroke soils your soul. Oh, Mike isn't on here. Mike, say nothing if you agree. All right. I think Angelica Ross as Nurse Rita, I'm mixed on. I mean, Ross is fantastic, but she doesn't come across as a nurse really to me, if that makes any sense. The soundtrack, though, I'm mixed on as well. Like during the show, there's some instances like when Margaret here is telling her story and it's showing flashbacks. It's not really scary enough. It was almost too much of the synthesizer in the music, if that makes sense. And that happens, I think, a lot in these two episodes that I've noticed. And I do want to shout out, though, Director Bucher again. There's a shot when Margaret's telling that story when Brooke is asking her questions and you can see the fire reflecting off both of her glasses and eyes. Fucking fantastic shot. Foreboding, maybe. I don't know. I've only seen these two episodes, but I caught it. And man, I thought that was a great shot. And that exchange between Trevor and Montana when he first got there about his elephant trunk and then not wanting it to be in the water with his lightning rod was both hilarious and uncomfortable for me to watch. But I definitely laughed. Last thing. So obviously we are playing off Halloween with the escaped mental ward thing and the introduction to the female Dr. Loomis that looks like Nancy Loomis, by the way, actually. But this entire scene didn't really do a whole lot for me. Like, I'm trying to reserve judgment, you know, kind of let it all play out. But right now, I could have done without that scene. Go ahead.
The nurse, she won't smoke weed, but will smoke Marlboro Reds. Make it make sense. Angelica Ross, I think she does a fantastic job telling the Mr. Jingle story and the menacing score coinciding. I think it worked perfectly. The gore and blood from Margaret's flashbacks, it looks incredible. I do find it hard to believe that she didn't flinch even a little bit after getting her ear cut off, though. That's some willpower there, brother. None of the kids in Maximum Overdrive could do that. I love the reveal of the hiker not having his ear. I wonder what that could mean going forward. And I didn't write that, you know, just to be pretentious. I really can't even remember what the fuck's going on at the end of the season. Emma with a great scream as the hiker scares her. Crazy story, but I actually got into an argument with a lady online on Facebook who said Emma is not a new age scream queen. How? That story still pisses me off. Hey, I mean, she's a scream queen. How is she not?
Right.
If exactly. I'm Brooke, I believe this hiker. If someone's that passionate about you not being somewhere, I'm going to trust them. No ditty, but Trevor has one of the best mustaches I've ever seen. I wish mine grew in like that. Ray, I love Three's Company too, brother. Great show. RIP to John Ritter. John Ritter actually won me 4 points in the most recent DGOT, the games, if you see those on TikTok or Instagram. Shout out to Bride of Chucky and John Ritter. My girl Montana with no shame here. She's at a next level of horny. Fellas, can you imagine if a girl tells you they masturbated to you? You know you beating her cheeks that night. The car's headlights would have terrified me. Great way to create tension in that lake scenario. I thought that was really well done. You know, like you mentioned, Brian, obvious yet effective to me callback to 1978, seeing all the patients roaming around the yard as Dr. Hopple makes it to the hospital. And this orderly, man, what a dickhead, showing zero empathy, finding a hanging person in the cell until plot twist, he's still alive and kills you. John Carroll Lynch, though, is a prominent figure in AHS. I haven't seen him in the other series yet, but I know he's like Mr. Twisty and all that. And he's John Wayne Gacy in Hotel. And he's a former DGOT alumni in Shutter Island.
Yeah, he is.
And friend of the show who did the intro for this and for Shutter Island. Also, Emma Roberts, like, are you kidding me? Scream 4. And then she was in a series called Scream Queens. And you're not a Scream Queen? I mean, come on.
Yeah. And A24 is the Black Coat's daughter. I know you've seen that one.
Oh yeah, that,
and she was she was in that. I've seen that, and she was the only reason I watched the movie The Hunt, and I was severely pissed off when she died way too soon.
Same.
She was not the final girl. Spoiler
alert. And she's been in like 50 episodes of American Horror Stories. Like, the girl kept saying she hasn't done enough. I'm like, 50 episodes? That's like an hour-long episode. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Here's the ending. At the gas station from earlier, the attendant is under the car when he hears something. A cat gives us a dumbass jump scare, luring him into a false sense of security. We hear keys jingle, and then Mr. Jingles releases the jack supporting the car and crushes the man before stomping his face. Back at camp, Chet is pissed that he's missing the Olympics and throws a can at Ray, slicing his hand in a far-fetched manner. I ain't buying that. Jingles arrives, and we see Brooke are helping to nurse Ray. She heads to the infirmary to get supplies, and we see that the hiker's dead body is hanging on the back of the door. She sees Jingles through a window and takes off running and gets hilariously clotheslined by a tree branch. She gets back to the group, and despite being covered in mud and panicking, they of course don't believe her. When they all go back to check out the hiker's dead body, it's gone. And they all tell her she's just high, and then Margaret scares the daylights out of her by standing in the doorway wearing a raincoat, and she tells them that they all need to go to bed. The payphone rings, but Brooke is the only one who cares. When she answers it, she hears keys jingle, and we see the Night Stalker walk from around the tree, and that's the end of the episode.
Well, it's kind of funny seeing my notes in real time because now I wrote, well, me thinking that there was more to Don Swayze's uniform saying Ed, but being named Roy, guess that was short-lived because he is fucking dead. So now I begs to ask me, why the fuck did his uniform say Ed, but IMDb as him is Roy? Now that fucking bothers me. I wish there wasn't something more to that.
And the tow truck, when Jingles drives it, the door says Roy's, doesn't it? Pretty sure.
Does it? I didn't notice.
Pretty sure it does.
Anyway, it was kind of a disappointing kill because I feel like my guy could have easily gotten out of that. And I don't know. I almost would have rather them not even show anything than show that. And obviously that's a throwback to, was it Halloween 2, I think, when he there, maybe that was Halloween 1. A little fun fact, though, Gus Kenworthy's Chet gets way unnecessarily, by the way, pissed off when, you know, Brooks talks about the competition at the Olympics. Kind of cool that Gus himself competed in the 14 and 18 Winter Olympics for slopestyle, half pipe, and big air. But is it not weird, though, after Ray cut his hand that Brooke went to fetch medical supplies from the infirmary rather than just have Ray go with her? To me, I was like, what the fuck? Like, why? But I don't know. All in all, my biggest takeaway from this episode was kind of like you guys mentioned, like, holy shit, there's a lot going on and we're only in episode one. Like, we already have the killers at the camp picking off people. Like, what the hell do these next seven episodes have? So I'm still excited as to, you know, what could possibly be on the way.
I hate to say this, brother, but the beginning is the best part, my friend. The ending is probably going to have me pissed.
Oh, all right, but
all right, the gas station mechanic does not have soft hands, brother. It's after hours and it's raining and folks are still grinding. Like, what the hell is going on, man? Go drink a beer. But another Halloween tribute, like you mentioned, Brian. I wrote Halloween 4 with Mr. Jingles killing the mechanic. Head stomps are always super brutal to see on screen. I laughed at Nurse Rita basically telling Ray to go fuck yourself. I'm off the clock. Go get your own Band-Aids. Mr. Jingles doesn't need a mask. I think his look itself is scary as hell, which I appreciate. It's so weird to me seeing Emma playing such a nice, concerned character when she was so good as a psychopath in Scream 4. Yes. Great reveal with the hiker being hung on the door, another classic 80s slasher tribute to Friday the 13th, one of Dustin's favorites, even though it's not one of my favorites. Brooke is built different, running full speed into that branch, and she keeps on trucking. I laughed at that too, Dustin. I was like, ain't no damn. She'd be out with a concussion now. Like, they don't have no kind of head trauma, CTE, nothing on this program. They were built different in the 80s. I like the fact that the guys went immediately into attack mode upon Brooke's panicked arrival, but I think they do a great job portraying the classic, nah, what you just experienced didn't happen, with Brooke going back to the cabin. I thought it was a great way to end the show with Emma on the phone hearing the jingling keys and then the Night Stalker appearing. I really like this episode and the next one. It's later on where it starts to get worse.
Oh, great. And I want to get
maybe you'll like it. I don't know.
You guys have any final thoughts or trivia fun facts?
Okay. The second season of Scream Queens, like we talked about, created by Ryan Murphy and starring Emma Roberts and Billy Lord, was initially going to take place at a summer camp, when another summer camp horror series named Dead of Summer was announced before production began, they quickly changed the location to a hospital. So this season of American Horror Story was partially inspired by that initial idea.
All right. I got a few. First of all, this is the first season since Murder House to not feature Sarah Paulson in the main title sequence, and the first ever not to feature Evan Peters.
Evan Peters, Quicksilver from Marvel.
Yeah, he's a big part of the show, other than obviously this one, this season. This premiere is the lowest watched in series history with 2.13 live viewers. In contrast, the highest ever for a premiere was season 4's Monsters Among Us with 6.127 million live viewers. That number did rise to 4.49 million live plus three viewers, though. Live plus three means, you know, within the first 3 days. And then the last one I've got, at the time of the premiere, or as of 9/20/2019, this was the highest rated premiere episode of the series, though. So despite the low numbers, it was still highly regarded. Beating out season 3's premiere, Bitchcraft, with an 8.4. This one had an 8.6. It's down to about a 7.9 now. And then just some final thoughts there. Like I said, it's kind of disappointing by AHS standards to me, but it was still good. The acting and atmosphere were great, as is the directing, which is to be expected. The story, however, is a little run-of-the-mill and cliche, at least through one episode. It did have some, you know, it sets up a lot. I like the vision, the direction we're going, I think. We got two different killers that aren't working together. That's an interesting wrinkle. All in all, I did give it an 8, so there's that.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
All right, ready to jump in episode 2? Let's get it. Episode 2, Mr. Jingles. We open with Dr. Hopple arriving to Camp Redwood. Margaret gives us a good old sudden appearance jump scare, and Dr. Hopple tells her why she's there. Margaret isn't interested in closing the camp and says she's not scared of shit because her strawberry jams, but her gun doesn't. That's enough convincing for Dr. Hopple, so she heads out. She doesn't make it far, though, as she blows a tire. When she stops in the road, the tow truck from the gas station pulls out behind her. She doesn't recognize the jingle of the keys and is way too calm about the situation, in my opinion. Jingles reveals himself and smashes her window and pulls her out. After stabbing her to death, he cuts her ear off, and we get our opening sequence. On the other side of it, Brooke is sitting nervously alone as the rest of the crew has some brews. She gets worked up by the news. I just said crew, brews, and news back to back. That was weird. She gets worked up by the news on television, but in typical fashion, her friends aren't worried or believe in her. Margaret shuts the party down and reminds them that co-ed mingling is against the rules. Montana gives her best effort to comfort Brooke, and her lack of relatability and empathy is comical. Flash to last summer, and we see Brooke walking the aisle in a wedding dress. It should have been me. But the wedding didn't happen, as her fiancé accused his best man of boning his woman, and then shoots himself in the face, and then shoots her dad. Actually, that's shoots his best man in the face, then shoots her dad. And then the grand finale. Jake shoots himself in the head. Wowzers. Back to the present, and Brooke says no one ever believes her, and Montana takes that as her cue to go in for the kiss. Brooke was taken aback and needed some fresh air. We've all read situations like that wrong before. What'd you guys think?
All right, so I don't know. I may catch the ire of everybody here, but Mr. Jingle's kind of a cheesy name, if I'm being honest here. Like, we could have just gone with Benjamin, couldn't we have? I mean, I don't know. Just a thought, just throwing that out there. I did love the kill with Karen, though. Is it Karen? Is it the doctor? But it seemed super elaborate thing with him, with the tow truck and Karen's car breaking down. Like, what? Like, anyway, does this continue to change my expectations, though? Because, I mean, we definitely have people killed off that I thought would matter in the series. So I do like that. I definitely would rather that than be predictable for sure thus far through two episodes. Also, my guy, Mr. Benjamin Jingles here, as heavy-footed as that motherfucking dude is from In a Violent Nature, this guy just right there fucking with him. Like, could he be louder? I don't know. Like, I honestly don't think so. I thought that moment between Brooke and Montana was really good. I laughed with her comparing Brooke being violently attacked and almost murdered to someone grabbing her boob outside of Sam Goody. And man, listen, I've got a good Sam Goody story from when I was in high school. I'll tell off the air. Remind me.
Oh, hell yeah.
But Montana saying the fat camp just taught her to nom and vom. Look, I just shook my head at that. But Lord and Roberts, I thought were great there. I mean, like I said, there's so much acting history between those two and their families. And yeah, I wish we had this moment to be a little less funny is all, and a little bit more dramatic. Those jokes made me laugh, but you know, that and this super forced wedding flashback seems a little out of place. And I don't know, or is that a place because I'm just not, you know, getting what this is supposed to be yet. But oh, during the wedding flashback though, I definitely recognize I may be the only one, but Stephen Culp as Brooke's dad, Robert from Jason Goes to Hell. Super bizarre, though. Like, I almost wonder if I should have watched this all the way through and then this be my second watch through, because I'm caught off guard by a lot, especially in this episode.
All right. Upon a second rewatch of this series, it's super obvious that Margaret has something going on with her and she's keeping some secrets. Dr. Booth, she's making demands for Mr. Jingles, a person she hasn't even seen exit that tow truck. And she knows him as Mr. Jingles, but isn't concerned hearing all the jingling keys, like, 0% awareness. Mr. Jingles was one of the cleanest swoops out of a car window I've ever seen. And I think John Carroll Lynch is fantastic in this opening kill scene. Like, I think he's legitimately scary as hell. He could do another slasher, like, in a big movie, like a similar character. I think he'd do great. I think Brooke has every reason to be scared, and not one friend is even a little bit concerned for her. Montana finally showing Brooke some concern, and I'm with you, Brian. I like the moment between them two. I even enjoy the comedy aspect of it. I think they have great chemistry. And holy shit, what a nightmare of a wedding. Getting falsely accused in front of everyone, getting gaslit, and then seeing all those murders. If I'm Brooke, I would be traumatized for life.
The fellas are walking to the shower while Trevor tells them how he got to first base with Montana. I saw what they did, and it seems that we also have a similar definition of first base. Xavier leaves to get his beach towel, and we see Brooke walking outside when Margaret cuts the lights off. Xavier is nabbed by a man named Blake, who stuffs him in a backseat of a car, and we find out he's the one who left a message on Xavier's answering machine. Turns out, Xavier made a boy-on-boy video, and he says he's not gay, but turns out 20 bucks is 20 bucks. This is followed up by an all-male shower scene, and I'm wondering what the hell Nico has picked, to be honest with you. The boys have an audience as Blake is watching through a hole in the wall and admiring what he sees, but it's short-lived as he's stabbed in the back of the head. Next, we see Brooke, who's sitting on the dock with her feet, dangling feet touch a floating body. She can't run away, though, because the Night Stalker is at the other end watching her. He tries to stab her, but she maneuvers out of the way and whacks him with a boat oar. When he chases after her, he runs into a hiker and then slashes his abdomen open, spilling his intestines, and then slits his throat. Back in the cabin, Nurse Rita is grooving to the radio when old Jingles himself walks in uninvited. Brooke makes it to the payphone, where she's met by Montana. As the Night Stalker watches on, the hiker wakes up and gets killed again. Okay? That's three times by my count, showing there's more to him than what meets the eye. Shortly after dying, he disappears. Back at the showers, the boys find Blake's body, complete with a missing ear. Xavier says he's never met the guy before, and yeah, when you say it like that, it makes people think the opposite. Trevor puts an end to the Night Stalker being a suspect when he notices the missing ear, and the crew run when they hear keys jingling. What'd you guys think?
Okay. Oh, careful how I word this here. But the guy's convo heading up to the showers, I thought was definitely great dialogue. It really felt real. It wasn't cheesy. But Blake, Todd motherfucking Stashwick, Star Trek alum, Captain Liam, that he pulls up to talk to Xavier and then, you know, he tries to check out Trevor's package or does accomplish that feat. Like, in what world does this make sense? Like, he went all the way to a summer camp to talk to X and, you know, what is this, Porky's with the peephole? I mean, don't get me wrong. John Gray, who directed this episode, I think did a really good job with some of the shots, especially like of the eye being able to be seen when the rest of the shot was blacked out. you know, it was shot interestingly enough, but how did Xavier even know that there was a peephole there to begin with? And what exactly was Xavier's plan when he ran away before Captain, what's his fucking name? Blake on here. Is it Blake? Yeah, Blake. Did he think that dude was just wouldn't find him later? You know, and I'm expecting to believe he'd drag his 50-pound foot Johnson snuck up that quick with no trees immediately around him. Come the fuck on. That's crazy. Very cool shot, though, with Brooks sitting on that dock. But again, I thought this was a dream with Night Stalker being there, because what the ever living fuck is Brooke doing, like, running off alone? Anyway, I have a lot of questions with this set of scenes.
Yeah, I got a decent amount, so bear with me. And I'm right there with you, Brian. I thought the walk and talk with the guys was a very realistic conversation. Which sense would you get rid of? If you get this girl, I want to go after that one. I swear, I've had those conversations before as, you know, a teenager or college kid. If I'm one of these counselors, I'm immediately terrified when the lights go out, though. We get a good 5 minutes, it seems like, of the guys gassing up Trevor's giant meat stick. Must be nice, something I'll never relate to. Horrifying scenario. Why are y'all laughing? Horrifying scenario.
What the fuck is going on this episode?
I'm having fun reviewing a show, man. Horrifying scenario for Brooke seeing the Night Stalker show up for her. However, bro is terrible slinging a blade. Nasty work for a serial killer. How do you whiff that bad, brother? But I would love to interview Zach Villa on the mindset to portray someone like a Richard Ramirez or even Evan Peters. Why not shoot for this guy? Brooke has another opportunity to kill the guy, but fuck. Will you mark that? I got stuttered. Brooke has another opportunity to kill the guy off, but runs away. It's frustrating. I know it's very 80s-esque, but man, that just annoys me. Terrible effects as the hiker gets his gut sliced open and they pour out. And I'm just going to vent here. I don't understand why a show or a movie would even show this. Like, just cut to the victim's face instead. The throat slit, I thought that looked great, though. Nurse Rita with a great oh shit face when she sees Mr. Jingles. I have one thing in common with the Night Stalker right now. I'm wondering what the fuck's going on with this hiker's body, too, after it disappears. Chet, Blake is dead. Poking him with a stick or checking a pulse ain't proving anything. Only in bad movies like Scream 3 do you check a pulse, feel nothing, and the person's still alive. Whoa. Did I say anything wrong, though?
Relax. Yeah, man, that's not a bad movie. That's the only Scream movie that has Jay and Silent Bob in it. It's goat. It's goated.
It was something you said, Nico.
My bad. Xavier comes across very guilty. Why would I be involved? I don't know this guy. Just tell on yourself, brother. I thought it was a great reveal seeing the missing ear and hearing the keys as this set of scene ends.
All right. Margaret arrives back at her cabin and puts a bottle of wine on the shelf and is met by the Night Stalker sitting in a chair. He asks Margaret about the hiker and we cut to commercial. There's supposed to be a commercial there, even if you don't have Hulu with ads. Anyway, when we return, Margaret lights a candle and offers to bandage the Night Stalker up. Is this bitch trying to smash a serial killer? She tells him that Jesus is the reason the hiker came back alive. She tells him the hiker has been dead for 14 years. The Night Stalker gives Margaret a very cliche emo speech about how pain is all he's ever known. And we get a flashback to his childhood. Rough stuff. He tells Margaret he came here for a different girl, but he likes her better. And he wants to see her feet. Didn't know the Night Stalker was a member of the Foot Clan, but here we are. She tells him that all he needs to do to truly be free, to do whatever he wants is God and trauma. And you can cut the sexual tension with a knife. She tells the Night Stalker she needs him because Mr. Jingles can't be terrorizing children. So it looks like we're about to get a good old Freddy versus Jason style villain clash. Cutting back to our group, they get in the van, but it won't start. It finally does start, but before they can make their escape, a bloodied Rita in the road causes Xavier to swerve and crash. She tells him Jingles is officially back, and now the van won't start for real. Rita and Trevor say they can drive, but neither have their keys. So they split into two groups, Scooby-Doo style, and they go back. We cut to Margaret, who finds our hiker, and we hear that his name is Jonas, like the Weezer song. Margaret tells Jonas he's dead, but he can't believe it. He's stuck in 1970, and a flashback shows us what he remembers last. He saw Margaret, but instead of helping her, he ran off and got hit in the road by a truck. And wouldn't you know it, was Jingles who was driving, and he killed Jonas for the first time, and Jonas is now a ghost. At the infirmary, Brooke and crew look for keys but can't find them, and Jingles is outside. At the other cabin, Trevor finds his keys, and Xavier freaks out and spills the beans knowing about Blake. We see the Night Stalker making his way through camp, and we hear the loud banging at each of the group's cabin's doors, and the episode ends.
Okay, so it's so bizarre because I feel like we're in the third act of a movie, but we're only on episode two. So that definitely intrigues me. I don't know what's going on with Margaret, but this convo here with the Night Stalker definitely tells me that something else is going on with her we don't know yet. And this hiker, I don't know what the hell is going on with him either, but a fact I saw that I thought was very cool is his name is Jonas Chivor, which is an anagram for Jason Voorhees. Very cool fact there. Did I need the backstory on the Night Stalker, though? I don't know. The entire convo between those two was just super weird and bizarre. And come on, you know I've got to say something about this Ghostbusters reference from Margaret where she's talking to Jonas and says, you know, what do I look like, Dan Aykroyd? Come on, definitely a reference to Ghostbusters, which is always appreciated by me, so let me tell you. Anyway, not my favorite first two episodes of a series. Again, you know, I'm debating at this point on if I should just go ahead and finish it and then come back and do these notes knowing what the true intentions of the stuff are, or if I should just go two at a time. I don't know. Maybe I'll get you guys to weigh in on that for me. Go ahead.
All right, yeah, I don't have a lot for this last set of scenes. Margaret explaining the hiker's reappearance on Jesus gives me a laugh. I think she does great. You can look into Margaret's eyes and see she wants some Night Stalker in here. My goodness. I like the flashback sequence of Ramirez portraying his childhood, which is fairly accurate. And by the way, Brian, Ryan Murphy, I think he's kind of he's obsessed with like serial killers. So he's an odd fella. I'll just leave it at that. I know this is throwback to the 80s, but the van stalling is cliched out to me. And so is the someone running out in front and someone swerving into something else. I'm over those cliches, to be honest. Jonas been getting ran over for 2 decades now. Poor fella. I love the line of him asking if he's a ghost. And I wrote this down too, Brian. And Margaret says, am I Dan Aykroyd? I literally wrote down, I know Brian appreciated that line.
Oh, yeah.
Great tension as both cabins are getting the doors banged on. Man, that's a hell of a way to end an episode that airs weekly. I'd have blue balls if I was just watching this week by week.
Yeah. All right. You guys have any fun facts or any final thoughts?
I don't know if you've said this, but I wrote down the episode's been this episode is the least watched in the series history with 1.49 million live viewers on this episode. I know you talked about the first one, but did you talk about this one? I'm not sure.
I didn't. I had it here, so you covered it.
And the last fun fact is that I watched this on, like you, the ad version of Hulu. And if I see that fucking energy drink commercial with the girl with the bad wig talking about she doesn't know what to do with her hands one more goddamn time, I may commit suicide. So that's a fact.
Watch it on Prime, brother.
I'll be switching to Prime. I didn't know it was on Prime. All right, I got just a couple here. So Blake tells Xavier, you are as dumb as you are pretty, and you are very, very pretty in this episode. Well, in season 5, Hotel, Angela Bassett's character Ramona is being locked in a cage by Donovan. She tells him, you're more dumb than you are pretty, and you are very pretty. So I thought that was a cool tie-in. The season that has nothing to do with this, but still cool. And then the name of Xavier's porno tape is The X-Man Cometh. And episode 6 of season 3's Coven is similarly titled, easy for me to say, The X-Man Cometh. So, what's that? I got just a couple closing thoughts here on this episode. This episode to me was right on par with episode 1, but it also brings more of what I expected from American Horror Story with the supernatural element. I think a lot of the characters are written in a very 80s cliche horror way, like Brooks Hole, everyone who gets close to me gets hurt, that whole line. And maybe that's the point, but it doesn't hit enough for me to absolutely love it. It's not bad at all, though, and I like it about the same as episode 1 overall, maybe slightly higher, but I gave it an 8 also. I did think that the CG on the killer's intestines spilling out was absolutely awful, but I can forgive it. Terrible.
Just don't show it. Like, I don't understand. Like, why show that? It's like, I don't know how these people watch this stuff back and think, yeah, they'll just let that slide. Like, it looks terrible. Like, just don't show it.
The only explanation I can come to there is, you know, they may have been on a Stephen King cocaine bender. And they're like, hell yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it. That looks awesome.
Hey, man, I think Ryan Murphy's a weird guy. He might have been on some coke, man. Who knows? All right, I'm going to do our social media. We had 2 promo posts. Dustin, he just made a new graphic for us, so it was too fire not to post it. So I'm reading from 2 different sets. All right, starting off with Twitter X. Mookie commented on the first one. I've only seen this in the first season. It's fun, but it feels they should have ended it halfway through the season. The second half is not as fun as the first half. I tend to agree with you, brother. Fraser Rice commented something completely unrelated, but he said, don't forget to wish Kinky Horror a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Diana Prince. Do not search her name at work.
No.
On the work computer.
That is a bad idea.
That's a very bad idea. And Mookie commented again, make this season 6 episodes and drop the whole Night Stalker part and just leave it at Camp Redwood. This might spoil a little bit, but he commented it, so fuck it, I'm reading it. The last 4 to 5 episodes feel like they drag on since they killed everyone halfway through the season. Shake my head. I really like this season, but also it's mad frustrating and just boring at some points. I won't disagree. Brian, I will say that even if they get killed off, that doesn't mean they're gone. I'm just going to leave it at that. All right, Instagram now, jhamburg88 comment, I've wanted to watch, so I guess I'll start soon. Hell yeah, brother, and you better tune in to DGOT the series. And Jesse Kraft commented, one of our biggest fans, one of my favorite seasons with the hands up emoji. So I put my hands up to playing my song. All right, let's remember the Book of Faces now. Shan commented, I enjoyed this season a lot, and it's the only one my boyfriend ever watched because who doesn't love 80 slashers? Right? I feel you on that, Shan. Cole McAlexander commented, I can't wait for this review. Hell yeah, brother. Michelle Merza, another one of our biggest fans. Love AHS. This season is really fun. I feel like they really captured the 80s feel. Anita Russell, 2-time blood donor. Really appreciate you. One of my favorite seasons. I love that they used actual serial killers. Yeah, AHS uses real serial killers a lot. Dave Bacchus commented, it was a fun watch for the most part, but to me kind of went off the rails like many AHS seasons do. Regardless, I'm a fan of the show. I think I've seen them all except the newest season. And we got 2 more comments and I'm done. I'm sick of reading at this point. Cole McAlexander commented, how does this compare to the other seasons of AHS? Personally, not one of my favorite seasons, but still pretty good. And also, let's not forget the fact that my boy was having a menage a trois to kick off in the first 30 seconds of the episode. Hell yeah, brother. Like I said earlier, I've only seen 3 seasons. I think they're all good, personally. But I do feel like they try and tell too many stories within one season. And it gets kind of confusing, especially Hotel. Dustin, you say you've seen Hotel. Hotel has a lot going on.
Dustin's going to answer, but I think he just Googled Diane Prince at home. And so he's going to be minutes.
I did. I was unfamiliar with our game.
Why are you breathing so heavy?
I was watching
You're
Cops.
Watching Cops?
So, yeah. First of all, my boy was having a menage a trois in the first 30 seconds, and I can't hear that phrase without thinking of Ja Rule and the Fast and Furious yelling, menage! But second of all, I haven't seen this season all the way through, like I said. And yeah, I think I've let it be known so far. It's not my favorite, but I don't think it's bad. I'm enjoying it.
That's fair.
Murder House, the GOAT to me, man. They started this show off.
What season is that?
That's season 1, too. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that when I picked The Walking Dead, it was between The Walking Dead season 1 or Murder House, and I went with The Walking Dead. And I'm picking the next series that we do on this show. I can't do Murder House because you're doing this. I want to break it up, but it's coming.
I had fun with these first 2 episodes. I'm not going to lie. I thought they were really good. I do remember watching this season, though, like thinking, God, there's a lot going on, a lot of weird stuff later on. It's not dark. I don't think this is a dark season at all. It's more lighthearted. And it's kind of, it's got some supernatural stuff, but you'll see it as we go on. I enjoy these first 2 episodes. We appreciate y'all listening. And yeah, y'all follow us on Instagram and follow us on Twitter X. We're doing a giveaway pretty soon. We'll figure out what the hell we're giving away. Or if you don't, all right, cool. Fuck off. Let somebody else win. Appreciate y'all listening.
Just want to remind everybody.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.